Welcome to another episode of the Rogue Startups Podcast with Craig Hewitt and Dave Rodenbaugh. This is a podcast documenting the journey as self-funded business founders and sharing lessons, tips, and tricks for businesses following the same path as ours. The journey is long and winding, but we're glad you're joining us for it. And now it's time to go rogue with Dave and Craig.
All right. Welcome to this week's episode of Rogue Startups. I think we're 18 since Craig and I got a little out of sync there. Sorry I was sick on you, Craig, but that interview with Brian was off the charts and awesome. I'm sorry I missed it.
Yeah, no, I hope you're feeling better. And it sounds like you're definitely doing better than you were last week when we were set to record. I'm sorry you missed it. It was a really interesting conversation, and I hope everybody got a lot out of it. I think we touched on a lot of important things that people should be thinking about.
Yeah, I think finally out of the woods with this genetically engineered H1N1 Ebola crossbred with dengue fever mix that I've got here. So thankfully, I'm on the mend.
We should just hope the CDC's not listening to the podcast. They'll come, you know, knocking down your door with black trench coats and everything.
That's all I need at this point.
Oh, man. You know, I think we should do a little catching up. What do you think?
I think that's a great idea.
So how are things with Support Vine?
Well, since our last update, where I was full of enthusiasm and optimism, things have returned to a bit more of a realistic spike, if you will. What I have been focusing on the past month is more intense customer development. So, as I had already said, I had gone out and I'd started these interviews, and I found out that the initial interviews that I had were good, but they weren't great. So I had to keep doing little follow-ups. So I'd find out little things about, oh, you know, hey, these people are doing stuff with screen sharing. And what about screen sharing? Is that something that's really important to other people? And here's somebody who's doing stuff with phone support, but they're kind of mid-market and they're not sort of the enterprise market. Is that something that's interesting? So as I would find out something, you know, maybe 20 customers in, then I would find that little tidbit like the phone thing, and then I'd have to go back and ask the customers that I didn't ask that question before. So I kept like running around and doing all these follow-ups and tracking the stuff in this massive Google Docs spreadsheet. And I was looking for that one feature, that one thing that I could get 10 people to say, shut up and take my money. But what I found so far is that I've got like three people on three different features, maybe four, that they're all like, well, if you put this in, shut up and take my money. But it's not quite that threshold that I wanted to get to where there's like this one clear thing that I could really focus on, because I just don't have enough resources or energy or time or developer bandwidth to implement all of these things and get out there in a reasonable time period. So, you know, I'm kind of frustrated at this point from that perspective. And, you know, it's put me into a, you know, I need to do more customer development, but I'm kind of starting to run out of people to talk to. So now I'm like banging on even colder doors of like microconf speakers that I've had, you know, cursory contact with. And I'm asking other people, like the two guys that are in my mastermind, I've already hit them up and said, hey, can you give me some people that you know that are like related to customer support and that sort of stuff. And so, you know, that's kind of where I'm at with the Support Vine customer development. Instead of like giving me the one clear focus, it's raised a bunch of extra questions that I'm sitting here scratching my head going, well, which of these things should I actually be pursuing at this point? I still don't have that clear singular focus with that. So that's the one.
So a question just on that point, and maybe to focus a little, but do either of the trends or the groups that you see lead to more, I don't want to say more of an ideal customer, but more of the type of person you want to work with and the scale of business? And that kind of relates to, would they be willing to pay a higher price? Like if you went down road A or B, would it lead to kind of, quote, better customers and a higher price? Would that help you make that decision?
Well, that's an excellent question. And you know, I've been talking to customers all over the scale. So I've got, you know, people that call themselves small and medium, but they're definitely more enterprise-y in terms of, you know, they're the kind of people that cut purchase orders to make software purchases, and they've got teams somewhere between the 15 to 30 size, and their company is like in the several hundred range, and their revenues are in the millions of dollars. Their customers are definitely more high touch and stuff like that. So I've seen some of them, and you know, a lot of them, they'll invest in very expensive systems where they're doing high degree of customization. So there is definitely a possibility that I could charge more, but the problem is I also have to be able to offer more, because they definitely see other competitors that offer levels of flexibility I haven't baked into the product yet. So there's that balance that I'm trying to figure out. Well, what does it make sense? What are the true things that they need? And, you know, is it something that I could give them an out-of-box solution that's like 80%? And a lot of them don't want the 80%. Like, they want the 98.7% solution, because that's how picky they are about it. Now, you know, I've talked to people that are on the very low end of the scale, and they're like, oh yeah, email is working and it's fine. And I'm like, okay, well, you're not really an ideal customer. So I've definitely ruled out that if you're a really small person, like a really small company, and you don't have like maybe at least three people on a support team, two or three people, or you just don't have a volume of support, you know, this tool is not going to fit. But trying to figure out in between those two, you know, what does the mid-market solution look like? What does the small business solution look like? I still don't have a very clear picture of that or an ideal customer. I've talked to a lot of different companies on the spectrum. You know, some of them are in IT, some of them are in health and healthcare, some of them are in straight up technology, and none of them seems to have like, you know, I haven't talked to 100 companies of just one flavor to try to figure that out, because I don't have that kind of rich contact list yet. So, you know, maybe that would actually be helpful. If I talked to 100 healthcare companies, I could find the ideal healthcare solution for customer support. But I don't quite have that contact list at this point, and I'm not sure exactly, you know, aside from just straight up cold emailing customer support organizations, how to get that. So, yeah, I'm not really sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you're doing of kind of doing a bit of a targeted shotgun approach to say, I want to get a sampling of this and this and this and different industries and different size companies and different types of customers is good to start developing a trend towards what one might work. I sure would keep up with that. I don't know that jumping all the way down one rabbit hole would be the best unless you were sure it was the niche you wanted to go into.
Yeah, exactly. Like if I found the one rabbit hole where they're like, yeah, you know, there's this one thing and we just don't like it. And if we had that and I found eight other customers that all said yes to that and they were easy to reach, I mean, boom, that's the way I would head right there. But that trend is not immediately obvious. And maybe it's like if somebody is doing customer development, maybe this is the exact same muddled message that everybody gets and that you have to just weed through it and try to figure out what is at the core of that. So either maybe my questions aren't deep enough, maybe I'm not getting the right answers that I need. I'm not really sure. So, I mean, this is part of what customer development is about, is learning about the market, learning about your customers, how are they using things. You know, I've got some very general stuff about customer support. I have my own experience about customer support, but none of that is really fleshed out like, this is the one killer pain point that if I solve this, boom, I've got it. So,
yeah. And I think the only other thing I would say on that point is, you know, I don't have any experience with like sort of paid acquisition or Facebook or Google ads, but I wonder if you could even, instead of conducting one of those campaigns, look at some of the data around like cost, because that might relate to how popular those terms are and how many people are searching for those things. I don't know if that would make any sense.
Well, you know, I think it's early to do direct paid acquisition. If you're talking about me trying to get customers, like put up a landing page and then throw up an AdWords campaign and then start driving people to that page, it might be a little early for that per se. It's also going to be very expensive in my niche, because I have actually looked at the AdWords prices, at least for customer support software and stuff that relates to that. And it turns out that aside from like mesothelioma, I'm like, probably definitely in the top 10%, maybe the top 5% expensive AdWords of all AdWords that are out there.
That's awesome.
Yeah, well, it's awesome and it's not awesome.
Nice.
Yeah.
That Ebola is sticking around a little.
It's got some staying power, let me tell you. Yeah. So, I mean, the paid acquisition thing, it was an early thing I thought about, you know, if I could just pound this on Twitter, I could probably like find 100 people I could talk to right away. And I did some initial stuff and I just wasn't getting the high enough quality of people off of Twitter that were interested in it. I could get them, but getting them to engage was a different story. So, yeah, that seems a little early for that. I think the direct contact method at this point is what I really need, because you got to have those back and forth conversations. I mean, even the early conversations I started having when we did our last updates, I mean, I've gotten so much richer since then by going back to them and doing follow-up questions. Hey, what are you guys doing about phone? Hey, what's your total volume ticket here? You know, once they've engaged with you a little bit, they feel invested in it. So it's easy to kind of do that follow-up and get them to add additional information to your previous conversation instead of like barraging them all at once with like this 28 question list that are all like essay style SAT questions, which just turns everybody off and they're like, yeah, no, that's not going to happen.
Right, right. Yeah, you almost want to just start the dialogue and kind of see where it goes.
Right. And that's been valuable. It's good, but it's also kind of slow. So, yeah, the patience part of me is not dealing well with that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. How about the product itself? Is it almost ready?
It is not. And I have had some HR issues the past month. One of my guys was not able to work because I was not looking at the things that he needed to fix. And that was due to the fact that one of the new developers, my backend developer that I had hired, he had actually pushed some stuff out there and then broke it and then didn't know how to fix it. So he had to spend a little bit of time trying to figure that out. And then he was also not working the full 30 hours, my new backend developer. So I said, look, I need you to work 30 hours. So initially he's like, okay, well, I can't work 30 hours because I got to learn all this other stuff. I don't know this stuff yet. I'm like, okay, you want to learn on your own time? That's cool. But then it was like 4 weeks of just half time. And last week I was like, you know, we can't really be doing this anymore because otherwise I'm just not going to make any progress here. What's going on? And so we had this conversation about what he can do and what he can't and why he was taking the half time before. And, you know, he didn't really feel like it was fair to charge me for his personal learning. And so we kind of came to an understanding of, all right, well, look, I need you to make the progress on these things. I don't expect you to know everything. I do expect you to put hours in and to try to figure things out. And, you know, you don't have to tackle the big, nasty, gnarly problems over here. Tackle these small things that are holding everything up. And so once we kind of got that worked out, then he actually got things fixed. And my other developer on the front end, he's actually able to start making some productive moves. But then all of a sudden, he had stuff going on in his life that was personal and didn't work for like 2 weeks. And I'm like, hello, what? So, you know, I had both of these guys doing these things. And I feel like I had to play like mom the past week and kind of go in and say, all right, did everybody clean their room? All right, why didn't you clean your room?
How is that okay? How do they think that's okay just to not work for 2 weeks? They have a contract with you, right?
Well, they do. But the reason he wasn't working originally was that he didn't have the stuff. And then 1 week I went in and I fixed everything that he needed. I gave him all the feedback he was waiting for. And I said, dude, go for it. And then nothing happened. And then that's when I found out about all this personal stuff that was going on. So we definitely had a very long come to Jesus conversation. These are my expectations. This is what you have to be doing. And so now it turns out this week, he's like, all right, look, I'll totally make it up to you. I'll work 60 hours this week. I'm like, whoa, dude, that's hardcore. All right, if you want to do that, that's fine. I'm not going to require it. But if that's what you would like to do, you know, I don't want you to burn out. He's like, no, I want you to be happy. I totally dropped the ball on this. So like I talked to him on Monday? He's already put in 30 hours this week and he's probably, you know, halfway through to 45 today. So yeah, I mean, he's an animal when it comes to working.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So I mean, we're making some progress again. I got the guys talking on the chat so that collaboration is back in progress. There was also a problem with one of the guys was working on the weekends. The other guy was working during weekdays. And so when things weren't happening, there was like this long lag time. So they couldn't necessarily work things out. And the other person wasn't there when they needed them to do it. So I was like, all right, guys, you got to overlap here. You know, because I was spending all this time on customer development, I just wasn't paying attention to the nitty gritty and the daily grind of what they should be doing. And so that was my bad. You know, I could have done better on that one. But, you know, with all of that said, I think things are back on track for the moment. Still not where I want them to be, but I think probably another 6 weeks and I can get something to where I can actually start dog fooding it and get some feedback from who I'm calling customer zero right now, a guy that I know is in customer support and would have some excellent feedback on this if I could actually get a working tool in front of him.
Yeah, yeah, that'll be huge for you. I mean, I think that'll be huge for not just refining the product itself, but also value proposition and positioning and marketing information and wording and things like that. I think that'll really start coming together once you get that, I think, and the first customer, even if they're not paying.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, just getting to this point has been such a struggle. It seems like there's always little things popping up here, and I can hear all of my other micropreneur friends that are in the background in my head going, come on, Dave, you should have been doing this better. Why weren't you? So.
Yeah, this is hilarious. I'm laughing a little to myself because Ken is literally in the process of launching Mastermind Jam right now and has been doing so for a week. And I feel y'all's pain. I mean, I don't have experience doing this, but I know that you get close and like the last step is just so hard, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's lots of things that'll trip you up at that launch step. So, you know, this is where the perfectionists come in and actually get tripped up hardcore. And then there's also the, oh crap, I forgot all of these details that are really necessary for the launch. Even if you're not a perfectionist, suddenly you realize, oh shit, there's all this stuff I should have done. And these are things that I'm really going to need. So you have to scramble to put that stuff together at the last minute. And so I suspect, you know, Ken's probably got a little bit of both in this particular case here. Cause I mean, Mastermind Jam was kind of in process back in April. So I know he's been working on that and putting it together. So
yeah. Yeah. So, you know, the conversation we're having about Support Vine and positioning and stuff reminds me, I listened to Justin Jackson's Product People podcast today. He interviewed Nathan Barry.
Oh, yeah.
About 2 or 3 weeks ago. And it was the first episode he's had on that podcast in a while, but it's really good. I mean, it was really very revealing about, you know, where Nathan is with ConvertKit and how it started and where it got to at kind of its low point. And now it's doing great. It's, you know, $6,000+ monthly recurring. But to your point, you know, he had this product pretty much ready and then marketing and positioning it was kind of out of whack. And, you know, how to find that space and that person to talk to. And he found it eventually, but just through a lot of picking up the phone and talking to people like you're doing.
Right, right. If you don't know who your audience is and you don't know who you should be creating the value for, you know, creating a product is absolutely worthless. I mean, I go on bootstrap.fm and people are showing up with their products and they're like, hey, I built this thing and it scratched my itch and I tried to sell it and nobody wanted to buy it. And I'm like, well.
Shocker.
Shocker. Yeah. I mean, that's not good. It's just not good. And it just pains me to hear that because A, it's so common. B, it's the first reaction. It's the exact same reaction I had with the first few products. And, you know, there's enough information out there that it's like, okay, there's some hard work that has to be done about connecting with your audience. And if you can't do that, if you don't have that, you know, unique value proposition and you don't have that specific audience, that person to talk to, you're really going to struggle. You're really going to struggle.
Yeah. And to take it one step further in terms of validation, I think you not just validate the product itself and the market that you're selling to, but you kind of validate your ability to sell something. If you can't get out there and talk to people before you're asking for their money about your product, you damn well are not going to sell them anything.
Right. And how many developers just hate A, talking to other people, and B, dealing with sales in general? I mean, practically all of them, as far as I can tell from my experience, you know, I've never walked up to a developer that I've said, hey, do you like sales? And they're like, yes, I love sales. I mean, there's always some negative comment with it. It was the same with me. It still is. You know, I have this visceral negative reaction to pushing something on other people. And it takes a ton of training and a ton of just getting over that aspect of your personality to be able to throw yourself out there, to make that cold contact, to accept that you're probably going to get rejected. I mean, mad props to you for being in sales and putting yourself out there all these years and understanding all of this stuff, because almost every developer I've ever talked to just doesn't get this, myself included.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, you know, we talked about the interview with Brian from last week. And I mean, even me, I've been doing this 10 years in sales. He's been doing like 20. So talking to him is like talking to Yoda. I mean, he gets it at such a deep level.
It's Does he talk in that little voice too?
It's like talking to Heaton Shaw, right? You talk to Heaton and Heaton says things and you're like, you just blew my fucking mind, right? Like,
yeah.
That is right on so many levels. And I was talking to Brian last week, you know, two sales guys talking. You know, we talked about things that before we started recording, I was like, oh my God, that makes so much fucking sense. And I would never think about it. So, yeah, I think we all have room to grow for sure.
Indeed. Indeed. Yeah, all right. Yeah. Well, speaking of room to grow, talk about Podcast Motor. I'll bet you've got some exciting stuff to say.
Yeah, everything's going well. You know, we have some growing pains, which I think we're going to talk about in a little bit, but it's going really well, I have to say. Probably the most exciting thing, just in general, is we've had some kind of cold contacts that have come through, you know, people who heard about us from another podcast or, you know, friend of a friend type deal. But this week, we landed on the first page of Google for my key term, which is just fucking stellar. I couldn't be happier. We got the 8th position on Google for our keyword term, which is just great. So, and as a result of that,
No way. Seriously?
Yep.
Oh, dude, high five.
And as a result of that, we got our first customer outside of kind of this niche, right? So at this point, all of our customers have been either a result of direct outreach or people that are in the startup and entrepreneur and business space. And we got our first customer in the kind of health and fitness space, which is another one of the markets that I've been targeting. And I've done some outreach to them, you know, for the podcast, which I'll talk about later. But this was just guy Googled for, you know, podcast editing or whatever, found us, emailed me, said, hey, can you try this? Here's the files, blah, blah, blah. I mean, we went back and forth on email a little bit. But yeah, and it's a really cool show, too. I mean, we sent him the files back today, and he should be signing up soon. So that's like, that's the ultimate for me, at least. That's where you say we can go from like 2 to 4 to 10 customers to 30 if you're on the first page of Google.
Yeah, that is exactly the place you want to be.
Yeah, yeah. So that's cool. That was kind of a landmark for me in terms of, you know, building the business that can really accelerate exponentially, I think. So, and in terms of new customers, you know, have to give a plug for the new show that Stelly, FD, and Heaton Shaw are putting out. It's called The Startup Chat, so thestartupchat.com. And we are doing the show. We're doing the editing and production for the show, and it's awesome. It's so every episode is 20 minutes and is super intense and actionable and hyper-focused on one very specific thing. And to the point where at the end of the show, they have, you know, tips and takeaways from each of them for the show. So it's a really cool show to listen to. I've gotten a lot out of listening back to it, you know, in editing and quality check and everything. They're 6 episodes in right now, and they release one on Tuesday and one on Friday. So it's been a lot of fun working with them. They're obviously both, you know, top-notch pros. So that's been a lot of fun.
I actually listened to their episode on the advice about advice, and that one was definitely awesome. So just talking to those guys in general is awesome. I'm definitely looking forward to listening to more of that. So, I mean, what a huge coup for you to be editing their podcast. But yes, definitely these guys are worth listening to.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. The one that launched yesterday was The Power of Thinking Small, which I think is a really cool concept, especially for two guys that live in Silicon Valley. I think it would get really easy to have, you know, delusions of grandeur living out there in, you know, the startup and the funded world and everything. And yeah, I think they both have lived in that a little bit, but I think they have kind of humble framework that they live in as well. So
yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And in terms of, you know, marketing and getting, you know, with our good spot on Google, one of the things that we've done is I've outsourced and gotten a lot of help in marketing and in content creation. And I've had the blog going for a while. We have 6 or 7 posts up now. But the thing that's really exciting is, you know, Brian Castle has launched his new productized service, Audience Ops, audienceops.com. Mm-hmm. And Brian is helping us do some kind of enhanced content. So these are like Uber blog posts, kind of the cornerstone of the blog. And the first post for that went up yesterday. And it's interesting. And we did an email blast to the list we have. And it's really interesting to look at the analytics already, just about like open rates and click rates on the email, I think are very good, like a 30% click rate, which I think is
nice.
Pretty solid. Yeah.
That's very solid. Very solid.
For, you know, at this point, 36 hours in. So that's pretty solid. And just the visits and everything are going up a lot. And I have no doubt that getting the content on the blog and not just kind of the baseline content that we've been putting out, but now, you know, 1,500 word articles that are really well researched, extremely well written, are helping a lot. So that's cool. And I probably am going to start contributing one post a month like that. Up till now, I haven't written much at all, just because I've been focused on kind of running the business and get the shows out the door. But as I look to being able to scale a lot, I have to get more processes in place around the actual operations of the business. So that's kind of the focus right now and allowing me to step back and focus on sales and marketing, which is, I think, the one thing that I can't really outsource to someone else. So,
right. Yeah.
And then kind of the last update in terms of, you know, marketing and content creation is I did talk about the podcast that we're starting, and we're going to call it Podcastonomics. And I've recorded 7 episodes so far, and it's going to be initially a 3-time-a-week show, and it's going to be little kind of 15-minute episodes, 15 or 20-minute episodes with, I'm shocked at some of the people that are on the show so far. So like Mitch Joel from 6 Pixels of Separation is going to be on the show.
Nice.
And we just have some really awesome guys that are on the show. I am on the verge of getting someone from HubSpot on to talk about, you know, why they're doing their growth show.
Does his name start with a D?
No.
Ah, that would be a true coup.
Yeah, no. So it's Mike, who's the chief marketing officer.
Still no slouch, for sure.
Yeah, no. So it's great. So it sounds like he's taking a little bit of time off for the summer, but we're going to try and grab him for July, which is, you know, it's going to be great. So the cool thing is, you know, people that do podcasting are really receptive to podcasting. You're, you know, hopping on your show. So it's been a pretty easy sell to get some pretty big names. Some shows that's like, I've interviewed 2 guys that are part of big podcast networks, and they're all totally different. The goal is to talk to people from as many different parts of the podcasting world to offer the listeners to be able to say, hey, you know, this perspective is this, and this perspective is coming from this angle, and this perspective is coming from this different angle. You know, mine is probably somewhere between these 3, and so I need to tailor my podcast to be more like X. And kind of the theme of the show is, how are you using podcasting to drive your underlying business? And these businesses are all so different that the angles people are taking and the approach to their podcast are sort of equally different. So it's been a lot of fun talking to these people.
Yeah, that must be super interesting for anybody who's listening and they're trying to figure out, okay, well, what's the angle I want to take on this whole podcasting thing? Because there's a million different ways you can come at it. And so now they've got all these different choices and all these paths to say, oh, well, you know, look, I can look at James Altucher and this is what he did. Or I can look over here and see, well, you know, Heaton and Stelle were doing this over here, and take a different tactic on it depending on where you are and what you're trying to accomplish. So that's awesome.
So, yeah, so the marketing efforts have been really great. I think we're doing the appropriate amount of things for where we are in the business to keep moving it forward and getting that kind of organic growth that we want. And at this point, it may be getting a little easier just because we're getting that momentum of, you know, marketing juice and SEO and everything on our side. But as a result, I think I'm realizing that I do need more help in the business. So at this point, I still am doing a little bit of the editing, but I'm doing a fair bit of show note writing, and I'm doing all of the actual production of the shows. So uploading to WordPress, uploading to the media host like Libsyn, actually like scheduling the posts and doing tweets and things like that, and featured images for each episode. So really looking to hire someone to do at least part of that whole process. And I think the thing that makes the most sense is to hire someone to do all the writing of the show notes, because just from a time perspective, you know, an episode's 45 minutes, it takes me at least 45 minutes to do that one task, whereas, you know, the rest of it take only 30 minutes if I had the individual pieces to put together.
Right, but that begs the question, is this something that you can, you know, delegate to somebody else at this point? How do you begin that delegation? How do you figure out what to delegate and what to keep? You know, this is the growth question, right?
Yeah. So that's really the meat of, you know, aside from kind of catching up a little bit since it's been a few episodes, that's really what we wanted to talk about today, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, I think we both like to have a kind of a framework around which we make these decisions. We've outlined kind of a handful of questions to ask yourself when you're thinking about, you know, when is it time to grow your team? And for me, the first place to start is, for a bootstrapper in particular, knowing the value of your time in dollars. And I don't think this has to be a hard and fast thing, because opportunity cost comes into the equation as well. But in general, you have to have a feel for like kind of the threshold of, I'm not going to do this for something that can be outsourced for a lot cheaper.
Totally agree. And, you know, if you're coming from a freelancing background like I am, you know, you kind of come in with an hourly figure attached to your time and your energy, because that's how you just naturally are billing clients. You're thinking, oh, okay, well, you know, I'm going to be doing this contract and I got to think about it at, you know, a daily rate or an hourly rate, like $100 an hour, I think is the number that I've heard thrown around by a lot of different people. That if you're valuing your time, you want to say, all right, well, my time's worth $100 an hour. And then if I can go out and find somebody to do this task for $15 an hour, then I've got a massive gain in what it is that I can get done versus what it's actually costing me in terms of my opportunity and my very limited bandwidth, right? So that's figuring out the cost of someone else doing that activity instead of you actually doing everything yourself. Because obviously there's a limited number of hours in the day. You're not going to be able to do everything. You've got to focus on the things that are actually truly the stuff that only you can do and that really nobody else can do, or that something that's not easily outsourceable, right?
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. And that kind of gets to the next question that you have to ask yourself, which is, how many hours do you want to work? So is it that you have a day job and you only have...
Or can you work, I think, is the question. And a lot of, you know, if you're a bootstrapper and you're getting started, you got that day job going on and you're like, okay, I'm putting in 45 at the day job. Maybe I can put in an additional 15, but that's definitely a hard and fast limit. You got to be super productive.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And this is, you know, gets to work-life balance a little bit, and what intrinsic value does that have associated with, you know, this balancing game that you try to achieve? For me, that's actually kind of the first question, is how much do I want to work? And then I try to fit in the rest of it around that.
Indeed. Yeah. Indeed.
And then you touched on another very important question, and that is kind of, is this activity core to the stability of your business or the ability for your business to grow? You know, we put sales and marketing into the one thing that probably can't be outsourced, at least at first. You can build systems around sales, but I think the founder ultimately have ownership over that in general.
Agreed. Agreed. Now, core to the stability of the business is one of those things that it definitely changes over time. Like, I would say that there's three things when you're starting out that you really just don't want to outsource, even if you feel like I could really get away with doing this. I don't think you should, because I think that there's too much learning involved by having the founder do it at this point. And those three activities, in my opinion, are support, sales, and marketing. Notice that development is not on that list at all. You know, you can participate in an ancillary capacity with development. So you can do the design, you can have reviews, but you don't have to be writing the code. And of course, you know, a lot of the people that I know are developers, and that's their core competency. That's where they want to be. And that's a hard place to walk, to take a step back from and say, somebody else can do this. It was definitely the hardest place for me to stand back until I got that first WordPress plugin. And I'm like, you know what? I just don't want to learn the WordPress API and PHP. I'm just going to start off with the outsourcing right here. So it's definitely not a activity that was core to the stability of my business if I could find somebody that had the right experience to do it.
Yeah, yeah. And then that kind of leads naturally into the next question to ask yourself, and that is, are you the best person possible to be doing that activity? You know, to your point, you are an experienced programmer, but in Java. So jumping over to one, doing PHP, and two, doing a framework and a system like WordPress would require a lot of learning on your part, whereas, you know, there's a guy in Brazil or a guy in the Philippines or the guy in Ukraine who does it all of the time, regardless of what it costs. And that person is actually much better at doing this than you are, regardless of how good of a programmer you think you might be.
Right, right. Now, in your case, you've got things like the editing of the podcast and the production of the show. Now, clearly, these are things that you had to understand exactly what goes into those, what is involved, how do I want to handle this, what are the nuts and bolts of all of this. And now that you've been doing that for a while and you've produced, you know, however many dozens of episodes, are you still the best person to be doing that activity at this point, Craig?
No, man. Our guys are, I like to call them magicians. I mean, I listen to the raw audio from some shows and then listen to what they do, just like a snippet here and there. And it's amazing. I mean, it is amazing. I do a pretty good job because I've done, like you said, a lot of it. And in a pinch, I'll do a show here and there, but they're so much better. I mean, they work in different tools than I do just because they're really professionals. And when we have something that's kind of squirrely, like we had a guy come to us this week and said, hey, I paid some bozo on Fiverr to do my shows, and they suck. Can you guys look at them? And so we sent
them
over.
There's a shock. Pay a guy $5 and he's not going to do a good job. Imagine that.
Yeah, yeah. So I sent them to one of our guys, and he's working on it right now. And I have no doubt that it's going to turn around and just be great, you know? So, yeah, I mean, I think very few of us are the best technical person out there. And if we were, we probably wouldn't be doing this. We'd probably be making a lot of money as a freelancer or a consultant in a very technical capacity.
Sure. And there's absolutely nothing wrong if that's what your career path is want to be. And you want to be the freelancer that's out there, you know, doing these kind of jobs. That's totally fine. But if you're trying to build a business, being that person all the time is eventually going to be detrimental. Like you said, you had to spend time and learn all of this stuff. You had to write processes around that. You had to be able to talk to these guys and say, this is what I'm looking for. This is what I've done in the past. How do you guys do it? So you would actually speak the same language about it. But now you don't need to be in there doing every single episode. And like you said, you know, you do the occasional one, but it's more about managing it than it is actually being the doer at that point.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Now, the ultimate question after all of this, if you figured out I'm not the best person, my time is too valuable for this, I can find the right person and I can do it relatively inexpensively, what would you do with your time and focus instead of that activity that you were doing before?
Yeah, so this is opportunity cost, right?
This is the opportunity cost that you either gain or are losing by not outsourcing at this point. So for me right now, you know, having the guys that are doing my development on SupportVine means that I can focus on customer development and marketing and the sales site and trying to figure out the right language and email autoresponder campaigns and stuff like that. All of those things I wouldn't be able to spend my time on if I had to go in there and sit there and whack out code and deal with the UX and all of that stuff. So.
Yep, yep. And I think this is something that you only are able to answer really well once you have a business going. Or, you know, Dave, in your case, you have done this a couple of times with your WordPress business to where you know that now, even in development, your time is better spent doing something else. And you know exactly what that is. For someone starting out, and I definitely went through this initially, I didn't know what else I would do if I outsourced part of, you know, a main core function of the business. Because it's a little bit daunting. Like, you hire someone and you say, I'm going to pay you all this money to do something. And then you kind of have to look at yourself in the mirror and say, wow, my time is now definitely worth something. It's at least worth what I'm paying this person. I got to go make that money somewhere else.
Right.
To at least pay for that. So if I'm paying someone $30 an hour, I have to go make $100 to pay for that.
Right, right. That definitely sort of elicits two responses sort of at the same time, right? One is this intimidation, like, okay, now what am I going to be doing here? And then there's the fear of, I've got to go out and make that money to make up for this guy that I'm paying over here. And both of those things can be very, very scary. And certainly, you know, with my first plugin, the first thing when I did that outsourced development right there, I still remember feeling both of those things at the same time. But as soon as I got over that and said, all right, that's not what I'm focusing on, I have these other things I have to be doing. As soon as I dove into that, I completely forgot about the other eventually. So it just takes a while before something new becomes natural.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think that when we look at this from a strategic standpoint, that your first step in outsourcing a part of your business should be to take the piece that takes the longest time, would be the cheapest for someone else to do, and that you're not particularly good at, or you're not the absolute best person.
Right.
And go ahead and chunk that off. And a lot of times, and this is true with you and I, it is a very technical thing.
I would agree. I would agree.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, stated another way, find the thing that'll have the biggest impact on your business and free up the most of your time at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is getting into a whole nother conversation, and maybe this will be our next episode, is how to do this. But, you know, a bit of a teaser, at least, I guess. Elance and Odesk were kind of the go-to places now that they're merged into Upwork. I find the UI and the UX and the tool itself is much better. I think that's a good place to go first for looking for any kind of help, and certainly for technical help. I think it's a good place to start.
Agreed. I've been hiring people there for years at this point, so we can definitely have a long conversation about that.
Yeah, I think so. And then the other thing I would say is, and this is maybe something that I'm looking at, is, you know, there's a lot of talk about hiring virtual assistants. And if your business is the type of business or at the point where you think you would benefit from that, one thing that I hear a lot of really positive feedback from people on is Virtual Staff Finder. So Chris Ducker's VA kind of finding business. And it's a one-time fee to place or to connect you with three potential candidates, all of which are in the Philippines and all of which, you know, are supposed to have excellent language and communication skills, and they're proficient on the computer and are able to do a lot of tasks. And the fee structure is such that you can afford, from a money perspective, to spend time training them for a couple of weeks even on what exactly you want them to do for your business. If they don't come with that skill set, I think you could probably develop it with them, because, you know, just the finances of it work out to where you pay someone in the Philippines like $600 a month to work 40 hours a week.
Right. Yeah. The economics of that are very, very lopsided, in my opinion, towards the United States. I mean, I don't want to take away from the Philippines. They're definitely getting plenty of economic benefit there on their side. But, you know, in terms of hiring somebody cheaply that is competent and, you know, literate and can communicate well with you, I've found the Philippines to be a fantastic opportunity and great economic deal.
Hey, Dave, have you hired people from the Philippines off of Odesk, or have you used something like Virtual Staff Finder?
I've used Odesk, and I have two from the Philippines that are currently working for me.
Oh, I might need their names. And I say that sort of in joking, but very seriously, because it is probably the move I'll make next is to hire a VA to do kind of the 80% of a lot of the work I need. And then I'll probably for a while at least come back and kind of check that work and release the final version of an episode or whatever. But to get me kind of to the 20-yard line would be a huge help.
Yeah, I mean, you can definitely get, you know, take a lot of the grunt work out of it and just get to a point where you're reviewing it before sending it out. And that's actually what I've used a lot of one of my VAs for, where she'll like prep large email campaigns where I just have to hammer out like 12 of them in a row because they're updates for the plugins. And so she's got to do things like dropping in the right link and changing the product name and changing the dates and stuff like that. Not hard work, but it takes time to go through it, and it requires somebody who's fairly detail oriented to make sure that all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed, and she's fantastic at it. So I can go back and just review it really quick with a quick test email and look and say, yep, that's right. Boom, send, done. You know,
saves
a lot of time.
And I think it's not just confined to doing administrative tasks and writing and scheduling posts and things like that. I've worked with some people that do some pretty good Photoshop work. And there's obviously lots of developers. I think the WordPress pool of talent there is pretty solid.
Mm-hmm.
So in general, yeah, I think in terms of the wage arbitrage, that's kind of the place to go. Another place that I've used kind of extensively is Eastern Europe, and probably a level up from there. But in both places, you do have the time zone difference, which does present its challenges.
Right, right. That's why I've tended to pick my developers actually from Latin America as a result of that. Because there's much more of a time zone overlap with the United States. It's much easier to have conversations at the same time during the day, or, you know that you've got at least 6 hours of overlap instead of, you know, one.
Yeah.
So that makes a big difference.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And I'm having customers in multiple time zones now outside of the U.S., and it's just the problem with that is it's like a day process, right? Like I email them, they email me back when I'm sleeping, I email them the next day, and they email me the, you know, instead of,
right,
we can email 10 times throughout the course of the day and something's hammered out, now it takes the better part of a week.
Right. That 12 to 24 hour lag is why I don't really like to use Asian developers anymore. It just feels like everything's taking longer. You know, you can have the same awesome developers in Latin America and in India or Indonesia or even Australia, and you still have that time lag. And so everything just takes longer as a result of that.
Yeah, yeah. Neat. So I'll recap real quick. So, you know, the questions to ask yourself when you're thinking about when it's time to grow is to know the value of your time in dollars. What is the cost of someone else doing the activity instead of you? How much time do you want to work or can you work? And is the activity you're talking about core to the stability of your business? Are you the best person possible to be doing that activity? And then the last one is, if you did outsource something, what else would you be doing with your time or focus instead?
Great points.
Yep. Right on, Dave. Well, that was a great show. Thanks so much. Guys, the show notes for this episode will be found at roguestartups.com/episode18.
Until next week.
And that's our episode for this week. If you have any questions or comments, please let us know at podcast@roguestartups.com. Subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Rogue Startups. And be sure to visit roguestartups.com for full show notes on each episode. If you're enjoying the show, we'd sure appreciate a review in iTunes. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.